Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Christian Contrarian. I'm Gary Wayne, author of The Genesis 6 Conspiracy. And today's show is going to continue with what we talked about in episode 8 about King Agag and how his heraldic title and his bloodlines have implications into the end time. And as you recall from the last show, Agag name shows up in Numbers at the time of Exodus and in the time of King Saul with the war with the Amalekites as the king of the Amalekites, and also in the time of Esther with Haman the Agagite, with an Agagite being a descendant or heraldic descendant of Agag in that kingship dynasty and bloodlines. And so we're going to talk a little bit further about this today in terms of how that bloodline had survived, where it survived, because David had come along and essentially wiped out the Amalekim after King Saul had failed to do so, and yet we still have Agag who shows up at the time of Esther. So we're going to talk about where and how that bloodline survived, and we're also going to look at some of the ramifications and how that rolls forward into the end time with this blood oath that the Amalekites had. And what they wanted to do was wipe Israel from the face of the earth. And this is not a blood oath that just was in one generation. The Amalekim were at war with Israel right from the beginning of Israel leaving Egypt. And these battles continue through the time of the judges and into the time of King Saul and King David, where David essentially wipes the Amalekites from the face of the earth because we don't hear of them anymore, but somehow this bloodline survives. And so when we look at the time of King David, we need to understand that even though the Amalekites are no longer this powerful nation, there was a sister Amalekim giant nation that still was alive and well and were probably living amongst the Horim, and understanding that Timnah was Horim. And so the Amalekim and the Horim lived very close together and had a very, very close association. And so when we look at the time of King David, and after he's wiped out the Amalekim, he's also warring with a lot of other people that are not generally associated with the Edomites and the Horim, whom the Edomites intermarried with. And we'll cover off some of that history a little bit later on into the show. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the wars that David had with the Edomite Horim heraldic bloodline that I think this Agag bloodline had survived into, that Haman the Agagite is going to be listed in the book of Esther hundreds of years later. And so in David's time and in Solomon's time, there are three Ben-Hadads and a Hadad-Ezer. So you've got Hadad, Ben-Hadad, Hadad-Ezers. These are all part of that heraldic bloodline of kings, but these kings are in Syria. And David is going to war with this king Hadad of Reboth, which again, I'll take that back to Genesis 36 in the kings of Edom in a few minutes. But they're classified as Syrians, not as Edomites, which is kind of an oxymoron until you get below the surface as to what the story is really talking about. So after David defeats King Hadad, he then marches south to the Salt Sea, which is very, very strange, and he's going to fight with the Edomites. And also they're called Syrians. So that when you have this account that is showing up in Chronicles and in Samuel, you're getting one version where they're called Syrian and another version where they're called Edomite. And that's not inaccurate, because they did have the Syrian kingships, but the people who came up in support of the sister kingdom in Syria were supporting their bloodline and their sister kingships. And so the Syrians were in fact Edomites, and the Edomites were the Horim, and this is the Hadad bloodline that is being carried on in the north that transfers out of the land of Edom and Seir. And so this is this Hadad bloodline, with Hadad being another name for Baal, or Baal, as some people will pronounce it, in more of the Mesopotamian and the Canaanite pantheon. And so when you have the name Ben-Hadad, you have this understanding that that translates as a son of Hadad or son of Baal, which I think again is reflecting these bloodlines of the Nephilim that go back to the fallen angels. And so this bloodline that is called the Hadad bloodline, they are the kings that are operating in both Edom and in Syria. And we need to understand that this was a set of kingships that were working together. And this partnership or this expanded sort of empire of the Edomites, it goes right back to the creation of the Amalekites with Timna and with Eliphaz and even before. And we understand this heraldic title beginning with a person named Hadad in Genesis 36, 31 and 1 Chronicles 6. And so this Hadad, it was the king of a city in Havith in, I think in verse 35 of Genesis is Havith is listed. And you also have another king that's called Saul of Rehoboth. And of course, Hadad in David's time was also of Rehoboth. And again, it's all sort of reflecting this legacy that is coming down through history. And so Saul of Rehoboth reigned in Edom. And you also have, as you look at these kings that are now being listed in that list of kings of Edom, they're operating in cities of that are both in Syria and both in Edom. And this is what continues with that expanded sort of empire that we're talking about. And they're almost alternating, it seems, in terms of you look at the genealogy in Genesis 36 closely, that the cities that are being named are kind of alternately being in Syria and alternatingly being in Edom. So it's like that was being transferred back and forth from generation to generation, depending on who was going to lead the kingdom. And so when we look at this empire that rolls forward to the time of David, and we look at what the bloodline would have done with the Amalekites after David was finished with them, and even though David defeated all of the Edomites he fought, he didn't wipe the Edomites or the Horim from the face of the earth that lived, right beside where the Amalekim existed. So it makes sense that because these were sister Rephaim nations, including the hybrid Amalekim and Edomite nations that were created from the Edomites intermarrying with the Horim and the Amalekim, that the surviving bloodline and that heraldic title would have survived in the same kingship bloodline and titles of the Hadad Edomite empires of Syria and the Saudi Arabia area. And it was very, very common, and still is even today, where the royal bloodlines would continue to intermarry, to continue with the purity of those bloodlines, as well as being able to track those genealogies. Now, when we look at what happens to the Edomites going forward, we don't get a strong sense of history as to how they impacted history, but they do show up at certain periods. And as we covered in the first show, when we look at who takes over the kingship in Judea in the time of Jesus and before, these are the Idumean kings. These are the Edomite kings that would have passed down these same bloodlines, whom King Herod is part of and is installed essentially by the Romans to rule over Judea. And of course, Judea is a problem for him. So he's probably chosen in part because they want him to keep the Judeans in check. And into this environment, Jesus is going to be born. And if you recall, King Herod is the king that is going to order the death of all the infant males to try and prevent Jesus from surviving and becoming the Messiah, because he's afraid he's going to lose his kingship. He's not all that familiar with biblical prophecy, even though one would think that he would be. And he's afraid that Jesus is going to take over the kingship, or at least lead the Jewish people in revolt against him. And then we kind of go kind of quiet after that in terms of the Edomite kings, but, and I'm going to come back to this in a few minutes, these Edomite bloodlines will survive into European bloodlines, and we need to be aware that these bloodlines are going to be around in the end time. And we get that coming out of, let's say, Daniel book 11, where it talks about Antichrist and his wars in the end time, and he's going to spare Edom. So God knows where Edom is in the end time, and whether or not they're back in the Middle East and there are people that are living in the Middle East or they're another location. What we do know is that Antichrist is going to spare them at least for a while, because God is going to deal with them very, very soon as we get closer to the day of the Lord. And so when we get into Obadiah and Amos, God is talking about Edom, who are initiating this blood covenant again that we talked about earlier, that began with the Exodus, that was an ongoing war with Israel right up to the time of Saul and David, and that Haman the Agagite, tried to destroy all of the survivors of Judea while they were in exile in Babylon. And this is the blood oath that is going to rise in the end time. And what's happening is, not only is there going to be a blood oath against the visible southern kingdom of the remnant of the Judeans, who are also going to be in the promised land and a visible remnant around the world, but you also have awakening lost tribes in the last 7 years who are going to all be marched back with the people of Judea around the world in an exodus to meet the fleeing Judeans after the abomination. And so Edom is going to initiate violence against Israel again in the end time. And if you recall, at the Battle of Rephidim, the Amalekim actually attacked Israel before they were ready, before they were trained in war, before they had weapons. And except for Jesus helping the Israelites at Rephidim, and through having Moses hold his hands up, and with support of other people to hold his hands up, that permitted Israel to win the day, because they had no chance to win against this powerful nation. It was, and as we talked about in the previous show, this is one of the most powerful warlike nations of the time. And these bloodlines survive through the Edomite bloodlines and into the end time. And again, we're going to see this blood oath rise to try and wipe Israel and Judah from the face of the earth. And we see that as a reflection in what happens in the tribulation of the last 7 years, the one in the first 3.5 years, and as well as the one in the last 3.5 years when the Exodus is going to be going on. And we also see how in Revelation 12 that the dragon is going to try and destroy fleeing Judea from Jerusalem. And then when that fails, he's going to turn against all who uphold the name of Jesus and have faith in Jesus and uphold the word of God. And that's going to be all the surviving Christians who are not taken away in rapture beforehand, and who are not taking the mark of the beast, and as well as Israel, and as well as Judah around the world, who will be soon to be ushered in Exodus back to the wilderness to meet the fleeing Judeans. And we also see Edom being destroyed in Obadiah 1 and Joel 3, and in Ezekiel 35 and Isaiah 34. So they are going to be held accountable for all of these crimes, and then these renewed crimes even in the end time. And what's being demonstrated here as we talk about this is that this blood oath seems to be part of that complete DNA of the Edomites, the Horim, and of the Malachim. And it just seems to rise up at all avenues over time, just as the people of Judah have been persecuted all throughout history since the diaspora of Rome, and particularly, which I think is an analogy of the end time, is what happened in World War II and the Holocaust with the occult Nazi regime and an Antichrist type figure. And again, I have a complete chapter in my book if you want to go through and see how the analogy of what the Nazis did is similar to what's going to happen in the end time. So now, if we look at this Edomite bloodline, we also need to understand how the adversaries view this history and these bloodlines. And they connect the Edomites into this bloodline in something that the Gnostics call, the secret societies call, the Elven bloodline of the fairies. And fairy is an allegory of the matriarchal bloodline, but also it's a belief system and a religion, with the fairy understanding and the original fairies being the rebellious ones who came from another planet and created the Tuatha De Danann, which are another Nephilim. And this is the fairy bloodline that is passed down through history, and including the royal families up in even to this day. I'm going to make some connections here now to sort of pull some of these things together. But this is the Magianic bloodline of the Gnostics. It's the Elven bloodline. And it's the bloodline that is going to produce Antichrist in their belief. So as the secret societies and the Gnostics are putting together the new Babel, which is going to bring about the end time empire, they're arranging this bloodline that has survived, and they'll have the pedigree and the genealogies to prove who Antichrist is, and also expect that they're going to have genealogies that are scioned or grafted into these Nephilim bloodlines that are going to go back to the Davidic bloodlines. And if some of what we're hearing in some of the literature and some of the propaganda that they're throwing out, they're going to allegedly scion in some of Jesus' bloodline. So, of course, Jesus is also a descendant of David. Those bloodlines from David are going to be false, but they're going to be important to have some sort of connection to the Davidic bloodline as well as the Nephilim bloodlines for the pedigree, because if you're going to deceive the people of the Jewish faith and permit the sacrifice on the temple to happen so that Antichrist can rise to power with the negotiation of the covenant in Daniel 9:27, the Jewish people are going to have to, I think, understand that there's some sort of Davidic connection with bloodlines to accept them as a Messiah and to accept the Babel religion, which at that point in time Antichrist will be working as part of, and a relatively unknown person until he actually finishes this covenant. So let's take this now back to how the Gnostics and the secret societies and the polytheists connect the Edomites and the Horim and the Malachim bloodline into this Elven bloodline of the Dragon Messiah. So let's go back to Genesis 36 again. And so much happens in Genesis. That's why it's so important to understand what's going on in Genesis. So in Genesis 36, we learn about the Horim, which Seir is the father of Timnah, is a Horim. And these are the dukes of Edom who live in Edom before Esau and his descendants get there. So these are Rephaim nations from the time of the flood forward. And perhaps even as they would take their history back to Nephilim, at least in terms of a similar type of creation, depending on how you want to understand how Rephaim show up after this flood and you had Nephilim before the flood, it seems that they may have even occupied that area as Nephilim and people before the flood in the same area, and they settled the same areas afterwards. There's two different views in terms of how that works. But that's a rabbit hole we're not going to go down to today, but it's an interesting rabbit hole. But in Genesis 36, duke is an interesting word that's used in the King James Version Bible. And you might, in other translations, see chief or leader or something to that effect. But all of those words go back to a specific Hebrew word, H441, which is Aleph, and H503, Elph, A-L-P-H. And so they're both, when you take the U out in the spelling of Elif, they both have the same enunciation, which is Elf. And of course, Elf is where you get that connection. As you have a plural of Elf, you have elves. And so in the transliteration and in the English transliteration of plural, that's where the elven connection comes in terms of how the polytheists will start to make this connection that these Dukes of Edom that married in with the descendants of Esau through Eliphaz and Timna first and creates this Amalekim nations, and they're all going to intermarry going forward. You have this Nephilim bloodline, this Rephaim bloodline, more accurately stated for after the flood, now grafted in as part of the pedigree that is going to be a key pedigree for most of the royal dynasties as they move out of the Middle East and into Europe. And the polytheists say they have the genealogies to connect all of these for the pedigree for the end time. The second part of the allegory for elf or elven or fairy, and understand that an elf is part of the fairy lore. And in the little people, you have three categories of little people, which are fairies, and you have gnomes, and then you have mischievous ones. Those are basically good looking, mischievous, and the ones that look after genealogies, knowledges, and technology, which is where most of the elves would come from. Although in the Norse lore, you'll have elves, as in the Tolkien overlay on the Antediluvian period, you'll have very tall and noble elves. Those are actually an allegory for Nephilim kingships, as opposed to the dwarves and the hobbits and the ones who are sort of workers for the higher orders of the bloodlines in terms of polytheist history. And so Eliphaz is also a word that is used to sort of help define the allegory that the polytheists draft. And again, Eliphaz is broken up in two different words, El as in God, and Phaz as in gold or God's gold and riches and or knowledge and a whole bunch of different things that the polytheists are going to blend into that name. And of course, they really like that in terms of El and the elven bloodline that they've also got in there because, again, they in their pantheon, El is a parent god, which is the same parent god as Anu is or Kronos and all the different pantheons around the world. And you have El as the Canaanite pantheon that is the father of Baal, who the Hadad bloodlines are interconnected with. So they've been, done a very, very good job of making those connections, at least in terms of rewriting history, in terms of how they want to present that for the end time. And of course, these Horim are said in polytheist history as they believe it, and it's important to understand what they believe, whether it's true or not, because it's how what they're doing with that belief and that knowledge that we really need to understand. And how they're going to utilize this information to deceive people in the end time for people who aren't aware. Well, the Horim are part of or intermarried with another set of Rephaim, but I think they're all part of the same Rephaim who were the Aryan Marianu that produced the eastern kingships of the Kadamites and the Kassites and the Mitanni. And they intermarried with the Horim and with the Egyptians and all throughout the land of the covenant to produce the kingships that usurped the kingships right after the flood. And so the Gnostics and the polytheists believe that the Mitanni were Indo-Aryans, just as the Persian kings believed themselves to be Aryans. And these are the kings that raised Agag up to be the highest of all the princes of the court that they had conquered in the Persian Empire that they had sitting at the royal court. And Agag, or not Agag, but the Agagite, Haman, is raised above all the other kings. And these are the Kassites are the eastern branch of the Edomites in terms of how they make that connection. And so, just as we have the Edomites that have an eastern kingdom in Syria, these are the ones that are probably intermarrying with the Kassites that are a little bit further east and extend in along with the Kadamites, who are the eastern people, and also part of the Mighty Seven before you get into the Exodus accounts of the Mighty Seven. And these are the kings that Nimrod's descendants intermarry into. And that's going to produce the Babylon, Akkadian, Assyrian, Babylon again, Persian kingships that arrived down at King Agag. And this is part of that whole chain of the metallic and the beast empires that are reflected in the end time in terms of Daniel and Revelations with these end times, with the end time empire of Antichrist taking over that seventh empire at the 3.5 year point. And so these are the bloodlines that have intermarried throughout the West and probably have bloodlines that will have intermarried throughout the world as well, because there's more than just the Western bloodlines to remember, but we're focusing in on the Western bloodlines with this discussion. And so these are the kingships that the secret societies and the Gnostics believe were the parallel dynasties that the Edomites married into, which was the Horim and the Malachim that David and Saul fought against, as did Israel at the beginning of the Exodus. And so Eliphaz marries Timna, daughter of Seir, who is, and Seir's name goes back to Satir, and Seir is a Horim and a chief king of the of Edom before the Edomites even get there. So they are the original inhabitants. And this is the hybrid Amalekite nation that is going to be produced, that is going to lay in wait with other Rephaim nation to wipe Israel from the face of the earth so that they can't take the covenant land. And so that for the dragon Messiah, the elven bloodline, this heraldic bloodline that goes down through history and is a title like a pharaoh or a Caesar, is wanting to all along to have usurped the bloodlines, the blessings, the messianic blessing, and the birthrights that Jacob and the Israelites received, and of course produced the Messiah Jesus, who is coming back in the end time. And so these are the same people that were trying to destroy Israel all throughout the age of the judges, in the time of King Saul, that Saul and then David finishes off. And these are the same people that Haman is trying to have the Persian kings that come from the Nephilim or the Rephaim bloodlines wipe from the face of the earth. These are the bloodlines that are somehow the Nazis graft their heritage and genealogies back into as being Aryans that we talked about. And so this belief system is very, very widespread, and we need to be aware of it because, again, it is what they are doing with that information. And they're going to bring this full about in the end time again to bring about not only a genocide against Israel and against Judah, and I'm going to talk about Israel, I'm talking about also the lost tribes, but also against all those who believe in Jesus, all of those who are grafted into this holy covenant of Israel that is going to be reinstated, not only the old covenant, but the new covenant as one covenant going forward in the end time. So we need to understand that we're going to see these bloodlines likely implement this blood oath again, and these will be European bloodlines. This will be more the Western bloodlines that are going to be doing all of this, because these are the bloodlines that moved out of the land of the covenant to the Middle East, and they're going to rise up again in the end time. And we're going to see this is all part of the tribulation of the first 3.5 years, mostly against Christians, but then as lost Israel starts to awaken toward the midpoint, and then after Judea rejects and flees Jerusalem after the abomination. And so if you have any questions, or you want to get the full series on this in terms of the Agagite bloodline, get a hold of me through my website, Genesis6conspiracy.com. That's Genesis 6, the number 6, conspiracy.com. And I have a 7-part series on this. So if you're interested in it, I'll carry it right through to these elven bloodlines, provide all of the details. You can also get a hold of me through Facebook under Gary Wayne. for my timeline. You can message me, and you can also get a hold of me through Twitter at GaryWayne63, at GaryWayne63. And if you have a question, or if you want a document, or a document from a past show, or just a subject that you're interested in, it, ask me for it. Be as specific as you can, and if I have it, I will forward it to you. So thank you, everybody, for listening today, and hopefully you've learned a little bit more about why it's important to learn what happened in prehistory if we're going to understand what's going to happen in end time prophecy. Good night, and see you in a couple of weeks.